Well, what strange sounding proverbs we have just heard from Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verses 1 through 6. Casting bread upon the water, handing out servings or portions to seven or eight others, clouds raining, trees falling. What is all of this about? Well, we can discern their meaning because the preacher, the writer of this book, who identifies himself as the preacher, he provides us bookends that hold these sayings together like you would do with your own books on a bookshelf that all have a common theme. You set these books apart from the other books and you hold them together with bookends. Notice there's a bookend at the beginning and that there's one at the end of the section that was just read for us, and they tell us what the common theme is for all of these strange things we've just heard. Notice the first bookend, it's in verse 2. It says, depending on your translation, it says, you do not know or you know not. And the other bookend, the second one, is in verse 6. Again, you do not know. All right, so this is a collection of sayings or proverbs that have something to say to us because we are ignorant. All right, we know not. But it's not just any kind of ignorance. It's not just any kind of lack of knowledge on our part. These little sayings are collected together because they all have something to say in light of the fact that we are ignorant about the future. Notice verse 2, you do not know what evil will be on the earth. You don't know the future. And verse 6 in the second bookend, you do not know which will prosper. We don't know the future. Okay, so here's the main idea that holds these strange little proverbs together. The future for you in this here and now life under the sun on this earth, that future is uncertain to you. You cannot foresee or know ahead of time with absolute certainty what evil or tragedy or calamity might happen to you. And you cannot know ahead of time if whatever you are doing will prosper and give you a pleasant return for all of your labor and work. No, immediately we would say, well, yes, the future is known, and the future is in fact established unchangeably by God who governs all things. Yes, of course, to that. And yes, there is an ultimate future that is unchangeably established. It's promised to us in the good news of salvation. We can be certain of that. But before God delivers us tomorrow, we don't know tomorrow. And before God delivers His people to glory, we have to live our lives now in a fallen world where from our ignorant and limited perspective, we cannot be certain exactly how our day-to-day, here and now lives will go, or know with any certainty what tragedies or delights will come upon us in this life. This book has been teaching us to quit trusting in dust and to quit pretending that we can, by the labor of our own hands, build anything that lasts forever, or by the labor of our own hands, guarantee for ourselves anything that will last. We've been seeing that throughout the book, right? There's this unpredictability of life that is being mentioned by these bookends, and the unpredictability of this life has already been mentioned in the book. Remember, if you will, when we were back in chapter 9 and beginning at verse 11, the preacher said that he could observe something, and this is something that you can observe as well. It's easy to see. You've seen this a lot. You've experienced this a lot. But he said that he observed under the sun that in this world, in this life, that the race isn't always won by the swiftest, and that the battle is not always won by the strongest. He said, the bread, the riches, the favor, and that is to say, the rewards, the trophies, the honor, the benefits, the recognition, they don't always go to the wisest. They don't always go to those who have the best of understanding. Those things don't always get rewarded to those who have the best skill. And the reason is because, he says, time and chance happen to us all. Meaning, unexpected things happen to us all. Because, and they're unexpected to us because we don't know the future. And we cannot anticipate the things of the future with any absolute 100% certainty. Unexpected things happen. We can't foresee things, we can't control things so as to guarantee ourselves a pleasant tomorrow. We don't know. He uses that great illustration there in chapter 9 at verse 12. He says that you can be like a fish. There you are, swimming along, minding your own business, not looking for trouble, trying to stay out of trouble, and still be suddenly caught in a net. You didn't go looking for the net. You were looking to avoid, and there you are. You're caught in a net. A net of trials, a net of tribulations, a net of disappointments. You can be like a bird, he says. And by that he means you can be very cautious, you can be very careful, always on the lookout for danger, and still be suddenly taken in a snare of some kind of calamity or disaster. You can be diligent to exercise your gifts. You can be diligent and wise with your opportunities. And use those things for the sake of trying to be as swift as you can, and using those things for trying to be as strong as you can. But the future for you in this here now life is still uncertain. Because you still may not win the race because of some sudden calamity. Maybe it was a calamity that you couldn't anticipate, but it happened. Maybe it was a calamity that you did anticipate, and you planned for it, and you planned against it, but you were powerless to stop it. As if from our perspective, it was just something inevitable. You can be diligent to exercise your gifts and wise with your opportunities, wise and diligent with your possessions, to be strong as you can be. But still, you've not guaranteed for yourself a victorious battle tomorrow because things happen. Things happen that you didn't see coming. Things happen that you had no power to stop. So how should we respond to this? Should you continue to try to be diligent and wise? Yes, of course. Should you try to be continue to be diligent to exercise your gifts and your opportunities? Should you continue to try to grow in wisdom and understanding and skill? Yes, yes to all of that. Yes, out of love to God, and yes, out of love to neighbor. But even after all that, you still will not have harnessed tomorrow. You still will not have guaranteed for yourself any success or pleasantness. So the daily reality in this world, that's what these bookends are saying. You can observe it. You've experienced it. These things are not hard to see. We ought not to be ignoring it or pretending as if this isn't what this world is like. And there are right ways of responding to this reality, and there are wrong ways of responding to this reality. So again, like I did last week, again, I'd like to extend to you a Happy New Year. 2023, here we go. But what kind of a year will it be? Will it be worse than last year? Will it be better? We cannot be certain. It is uncertain to us. So these strange-sounding proverbs that were read to you at the beginning of chapter 11 will help us to chart a course through this uncertain terrain. So let's take a look at it. Verses 1 and 2. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a serving or a portion to 7 and also to 8. For you do not know what evil will be on the earth. Bread, this bread in verse 1, this bread is not just your food. This bread in verse 1 represents all of the good provisions, food and other things that God has allowed you to harvest and to build and to collect. Bread in the book of Ecclesiastes is the good that you've gained from your labor. That's chapter 2. Your bread is the variety of gifts and provisions that God gives to you. He gives them to you for your help and for your enjoyment. That's chapter 3. Chapter 5, your bread is the portion or the serving that comes to you first from God through the means of your labor. Okay, so verse 1 here says we are to cast these things. Our bread, our provisions, the good things that God has given to us, we're to cast them upon the waters. You can think of it in this way as taking taking what you've earned, taking what has been given to you, taking what you've harvested, built, and collected, and sending some of it out, back out into the world to do some work for you. You work, you gained something, and now you're taking what you've gained, and you want to put that to work as if you're sending it out on the ships of business. You're sending some of what you have out onto the ships of business and investment. You're putting it out there into the world to do some work for you. And we see here that it might bring some benefit for you. It may come back to you in many days. You invest in whatever way you might do that. You put those things to work, and it's a good thing. It's a legitimate thing to do that for the sake of drawing even further benefit for yourself. And we are to give a serving to others. Has God given you a portion to you from your labor? Well, then share some with others. And not to one or even two others, but to 7 and even 8 others. There is, in this kind of sharing of your portion with others, a serving that belongs to you, but now you're making it a portion for someone else. You see in here 7 or 8, there's this eagerness. There's this generosity from our own hearts in the sharing of our gifts and provisions and portions to be a blessing to someone else. So we're taking these things that God has given us for our help and for our enjoyment. We use them to benefit ourselves. That's fine. And we're using them to be a blessing and to benefit to others. Now, do you know why this is wise to put your provisions to work for a return on your investment, and why it's wise to share a portion and to make investments in people through your generosity to them? Do you know why that's wise? Notice what the text says. It's because you don't know what tragedy might strike you tomorrow. A great loss could happen tomorrow. But don't let that possibility drive you into a fearful clinging to the good things that God has given to you. You could be caught in a net, but don't let that keep you from swimming today with wisdom and work and generosity. Yes, you could be taken suddenly in a snare tomorrow, but you can't use that uncertain future as an excuse for not flying today with work and investment and joy and proper kind of confidence and with generosity. You have the wheat seed to sow, but who knows? A plague of insects or a drought could come later in the summer. So what do you do? If you withhold the seed out of fear of a possible disaster, well, you've guaranteed yourself no crop. You've not guaranteed yourself any safety or security by withholding. So what do? You cast the seed. You cast the seed. And you try to use that provision that God has given to you, you try to use it as an investment. You try to use it for a return. You use it in a way that it'll be a blessing to you and as a blessing to others. And who knows? Who knows? That extra benefit that you have gained for yourself and the way that you have been a blessing to others, that very benefit could be the very means that God uses to help you through some potential calamity in the future. It may come back to you after many days. And that which comes back to you could be the means for God's maintenance of you through a difficult time. So we look at verses 1 and 2 and we say, well, this is good practical advice, isn't it? But you know what else it is? It's also working on temptations that we face. It's working on the temptation to be fearful, and it's working on the temptation to be anxious or even inactive in the face of an uncertain tomorrow. Now, I wonder if any of you might be able to identify with this. The proverb, I think, is the opposite of the way that we can sometimes think. For example, I think here the hoarder is being rebuked here, the hoarder. By hoarding, I'm not referring to wisely saving up for the future. By hoarding, I mean that mentality of fear and that mentality of anxiety over provision in the face of an uncertain and possibly disastrous tomorrow. This fear that leads to or this anxiety for tomorrow that leads to a fearful accumulating and clinging today. I think the proverb is rebuking that. The hoarder thinks that benefit and safety and happiness is by holding, keeping, and clinging. But no, says the proverb, because tomorrow might be disastrous, because tomorrow just might be a day of calamity and loss, get busy today with your work and with your sharing, with your wise handling of the good things that God has given to you. Your investment of your bread and your portions and your gifts and your time and yourself can bring good return for yourself and can bring good return for others. And that return could very well turn out to be the means that help you through a calamity. And besides that, if you are too fearful to share today in light of an uncertain future, tomorrow may be too late for you to do it. Hoarding, clinging, fearful, accumulating. That actually isn't guaranteeing ourselves any safety. There's something else I think here that is being rebuked in the proverb. It could be a tendency for us, a temptation for us. And that would be the fearful or anxious withdrawing from our responsibilities. A fearful or anxious withdrawing from the work that we need to be doing and from the decisions that we need to be making. Curling up into a fearful and indecisive ball today because of an uncertain tomorrow is actually keeping you from the benefits you could be earning for yourself. It is actually keeping you from being a blessing to others. Curling up into a fearful ball because who knows what tomorrow... This is being eliminated as a wise possibility for us. Safety, happiness, contentment, tomorrow just might be found with the wise and generous use of your money and provisions and talents and gifts and time today. So here's the first bookend. You don't know what tragedy might be ahead for you, but don't let that uncertain tomorrow drive you into a fearful hoarding or into selfish miserliness or anxious inactivity or fearful indecision or a withdrawing of yourself or a withdrawing of your gifts from the opportunities that you have to live your life today. It's good practical advice, and it's when you begin to think about it, it's working on temptations that we face and tendencies that we need to be aware of. There's enough opportunity, wouldn't you agree? There's enough opportunity for difficulty and hardship in this world without us actually encouraging it upon ourselves or leaving ourselves unnecessarily vulnerable to it because we're too fearful to get out there and to live our lives and to use our provisions wisely and generously. Now, let's take a look at verses 3 through 5, where we have a collection of four sayings. The next four little sayings will help you to diagnose if you are struggling in some way because of an uncertain future. If you're thinking to yourself, why is this so hard? Why do we need instruction in the Scripture on this? Why can this be so difficult for me? Well, the next four little sayings could help you to diagnose why you might be struggling with a fearful or anxious hoarding, or why you might be struggling with inactivity or indecisiveness in the face of an uncertain future. Four reasons why it can be so challenging to live in the face of an uncertain future. You ready? Here we go. Number one, if the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. Now, aren't you glad that you went to all the effort this morning to get up and get dressed so that you could come here and listen to me tell you that? You observe this all the time. Here's a reason why it can be so difficult to live with joy today, with confidence today, with generosity today, and why you might be tempted to fearfulness or anxiety or hoarding or selfishness or inactivity or indecisiveness in your working and planning and living and sharing. Here's the reason. If the clouds are full of rain, what do? They rain. They rain. How is this a reason, you're wondering? What? How is this a reason for fearfulness or fearful inactivity or anxious indecisiveness? Imagine if I gave you all the assignment to go outside on a day when the clouds are full of water. They've become dark and heavy and ominous. And I told you to go out there and to keep it from raining. You all would say this. You would say, oh yes, JD has lost his mind. We all saw this coming, but now it's happened. You've told us to go out there and to keep it from raining. Why are you asking us to do something that we have no power to do? If I were to say to you, go out there on a day when the clouds are ominous and dark and heavy and keep it from raining, You would quote this verse to me and you would say, if the clouds are full of rain, they're going to rain. And they're going to rain whether I like it or not. They're going to rain whether I want it or not. They're going to rain whether I plan for it or not. So sure, go ahead and plan that outdoor wedding. Go ahead and plan that outdoor birthday party with your eye on the weather forecast. You can plan, you can work, you can do the best you can to pick the right day. You can anticipate as best you can But what is still the reality? You can't keep it from raining. We live a life here and now where there are many things that seem, from our perspective, to just have been inevitable and to have just been unavoidable. Every day we come face to face with our powerlessness. You can be tempted to take the reality of an uncertain tomorrow. You can take the reality of a potentially disastrous tomorrow. And you could respond by trying to hold on to the belief that somehow you can figure out a way to overpower the uncertainty and to control and to overpower and so then guarantee for yourself a certain kind of tomorrow. Anybody tempted in that way? But all you have to do is go outside when the clouds are heavy and dark and ominous and realize that's not the way that life is, and that's not a privilege that you get to have in this life. If it's going to rain and you're outside, you're going to get wet. Or you can be tempted to just quit your working. You can be tempted to quit your planning. You can be tempted to quit your sharing in the face of your powerlessness or lack of control. But the first bookend has already eliminated that as not available to you or as what you ought not to be doing. Powerlessness in the face of an uncertain future. This is the reality. And we need to accept that. To whatever degree we're not accepting that, we're leaving ourselves vulnerable to being tempted in a variety of ways or engaging in foolish thinking. Notice the second one, and you'll be very glad that you made all the effort to get here today to listen to the second one. It says, if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall lie. Here's another reason why wise and confident and generous living, planning, investing, sharing today can be so difficult. Here's why the joy of swimming today and flying today might be so hard to find. It's because a tree could fall to the south. Oh, hold on a second. Wait a minute. It could fall to the north. Which way will it fall? A tree could fall to the north, it could fall to the south, east or west. Now here comes another assignment, and at this point you're thinking, oh no, these assignments. But imagine if I gave you the assignment to go to the local park and to walk among the trees, and the assignment was for you to make an absolute 100% certain prediction which direction each tree will fall whenever it falls. How would you respond to that assignment? You would say, well, why are you asking us to predict the unpredictable? There's way too many variables. It's impossible to know. There's no way to know for sure. Ask anybody who has taken their chainsaw out and cut down trees, and they will tell you how they did the work of planning. They did the work of observing and trying to understand all of the variables, and still sometimes a tree falls exactly where you were trying for it not to fall. So take a walk in the woods, and there's a tree laying where it fell. You could not have made a certain prediction that the tree was going to fall in that direction and not in another. So here it is. We live a life where we cannot predict the future. It is uncertain to us. And here is another reason why we can be tempted to a fearful withdrawing from life, or how we can be tempted to a fearful clinging to our provisions, or how we can be tempted to an anxious indecisiveness. Yes, again, God governs all things, but from our limited perspective, there are so many things that seem to be just random. From our perspective, they seem to be haphazard. They seem to be arbitrary to us. They would seem to have happened without any reason that we can see or any reason that we could have predicted. Here's a third reason. Here's a third reason. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. Yep, there it is. Here's another reason why living today in the face of an uncertain tomorrow can be so challenging to us, and why it can present with a variety of temptations, or temptations to engage in foolish thinking or foolish activity. Notice the farmer here. There he is. It's time to sow the seed, and he goes out and he looks at the wind. And it's time to harvest, and he goes out and he looks at the clouds. But he just doesn't know. And we notice the struggle in his heart. It's a struggle of indecisiveness. He looks and he doesn't act. We see this battle within his mind. The farmer is ready to sow the seed, but he looks at the wind. If the wind is too strong, the seed could be blown away and wasted. What does the farmer know? Will the wind cooperate or will it not? Which day should the farmer choose? Timing is so important in that. Can he ever be 100% absolutely certain that he has timed it perfectly? No. He will never have that, because he has no power over the weather. He has no power over the wind. He has not the omniscience to know it ahead of time. So we see him there struggling with indecisiveness because of the problem of timing when it comes to our investing, and the timing of our working, and the proper timing of our sharing. Can we ever have 100% certainty that we have timed our decision perfectly? We never have that. We never have that. And so we see here the farmer, he's not sure. He's not sure about the wind, and so he doesn't sow. But at the end of the growing season, he's faced with the same issue. Should he reap today? Should he reap tomorrow? He looks at the clouds. Will they rain or not? That's important because the crop needs to be brought in dry. In our own area, lots of fields of coastal Bermuda grown and baled into these big round bales that you see. Well, you can't do that when it's wet, because you roll all that up when it's wet, it'll rot very quickly. When's the right time to do it? Can you ever perfectly time those decisions? We see the difficulty of timing. The farmer has to face the risk. He has to face the possibility of loss by making an ill-timed decision. But making no decision at all would only guarantee loss and leave him not less, but more vulnerable to any calamity that's ahead of him. So he has to press ahead. He has to press ahead with the decision. One commentator describes the situation like this. He says, if a person waits for the best time to act, he may hesitate and not act at all. Thus, the right time to act always remains uncertain from the human standpoint. One must act even when there is uncertainty. And to that, we would add this, that we can never have absolute certainty with the under the sun, here and now matters and results. You could be the swiftest and still not win the race tomorrow. You could be the strongest and still not win the battle tomorrow. You could be wise. You could have good insight and understanding. You could have been diligent to develop good competence and skill, and still something could happen that you have no power to overcome. Something could happen that was impossible to anticipate. Way too many variables. Something could happen that was impossible to plan against. But you're still called by the Lord to work. You're still called by the Lord to plan and to decide and invest and share, even in the face of an uncertain tomorrow. In fact, the uncertainties of tomorrow, in fact, the potential for being snared in a calamity or disaster tomorrow, is all the more reason to work and plan and share your bread and your gifts today. Now, you could respond to this reality that's been laid out for us, and these odd-sounding proverbs that are describing what all of us know, describing what all of us can easily see and what all of us have experienced. These things are describing the uncertainties that we face and why they are uncertain to us. You can respond to all of this uncertainty with fearful hoarding. You can respond to your powerlessness or the unpredictability of things or to the difficulty of timing. You could respond to all of this by anxiously withdrawing from your responsibilities and decisions. You could withhold your bread and provisions and time and talents and yourself. Or you could respond by trying to ignore what you can plainly see about all this and think that you could be the exception to it, trying to cling to the false hope that you could be somehow clever enough, you could somehow be careful enough to guarantee for yourself all of the results that you want. You could respond to all of this with a form of perfectionism, trying to live this life without doing any work and without making any decisions until you feel like you have absolute certainty with the outcome. But all of these options have been eliminated as foolish or as not even available to you to have. Let's take a look at the fourth thing that is said here, this fourth saying. We find it in verse 5. Here's another reason why facing an uncertain tomorrow can be so difficult. And the reason is because we cannot comprehend what God is doing. It says, as you do not know which way, what is the way of the wind, some translations will say, as you do not know which is the way of the spirit, or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. This is another reason why we can struggle so with whatever it might be, fearfulness, anxiety, inactivity, indecision, withdrawing, engaging in false hopes or false confidence. Here's another reason why, in the face of an uncertain tomorrow, it's because we don't have the ability to comprehend what God is doing. It's impossible for us to comprehend, that is, to absolutely, completely understand all of the details that God is doing. We certainly can't see the big picture. And that can make it difficult for us. The reason that we are powerless to stop things that seem inevitable to us is because the power of absolute control belongs to God alone. Are you good with that? Are you content with that? Because you're not going to comprehend it. But this is where we're at. This is the position that we have as creatures. The reason so many things are unexplainable or apparently random to us, seemingly haphazard, certainly unpredictable, is because omniscience belongs to God alone. The reason we can never have absolute certainty with the timing of our working, the timing of our investing and sowing and harvesting and sharing, is because the absolute power and the absolute knowledge belong to God alone. So you see the position that this fourth saying puts us in? We have no other option but to live out our lives and to make our decisions and to throw that seed out there or to gather the crop in as carefully and as wisely as we can from this lowly position of our creaturely limitedness where we cannot comprehend the work that God is doing. The works that are, we are told here, are God's works. The things that happen, the things that unfold, this is by the sovereign ordaining of God. But try as we might, and though we might see how some pieces are fitting together, it is impossible for us to understand why He does all that He does, or how He does all that He does. Why would God have allowed, why did He allow that to happen to me? We don't know. We cannot comprehend all of these things. We cannot understand all of the details. We have to live and learn and work and build and collect and invest and share without the ability to comprehend the works and all of the consequences in this world. But did you see the good news in that fourth saying? The works and the big picture and the plan, they're His. And we know that He is good. The works and the events, the timing of the rain, the direction of a falling tree, and everything that we cannot overpower, everything that we cannot anticipate, they all belong to Him. You don't know what tomorrow will be. You don't know what it will be for you. You don't know if it's going to be pleasant. You don't know if it's going to be difficult. You don't know what the consequences and results will be for you tomorrow from decisions today, but they are all the working of God who never fails to glorify His goodness. Tomorrow is uncertain, and it is impossible for us to comprehend the works of God. So should we think of tomorrow and respond today with hoarding, with fearfulness, with anxiety, with a withdrawing from life, with a withdrawing from our decisions, with a withdrawing from the work that we have to engage in today? No. Yes, we don't know tomorrow, and we don't know how it all is fitting together in God's plan, which must certainly be a good plan. But we can engage with confidence that they are the works of God. We don't know our time, but however the details fall to us, we can be certain that tomorrow belongs to God and it does not belong to chaos. However chaotic it sometimes seems to us, and however chaotic it feels to us, we know that it truly does belong to God and not to anything else. And therefore, we've arrived at the conclusion, at the second bookend, verse 6. And now you can see that it's really the same as in verse 1. In the morning, right, in the light of trees falling where they will, in the light of your powerlessness underneath the rain cloud, in light of all of these things, In the morning, sow your seed. And in the evening, do not withhold your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, either this or that, or whether both alike will be good. The future for you in this here and now life under the sun on this earth is uncertain to you. You cannot know ahead of time with absolute certainty what evil or tragedy or calamity might happen to you. And you cannot know ahead of time whether whatever you are doing will prosper and give you a pleasant return on your work, or whether it won't. Withdrawing from your work will not protect you from potential calamity, but only possibly even make it more likely. Hoarding your bread, hoarding your provisions, hoarding your gifts, hoarding your time will not guarantee you any lasting safety or happiness. That's been a main point of this book, that treasures that return to dust are not worth clinging to. Fearful indecision because you can't anticipate everything. That here has been ruled out. Trying to live and plan as if you can overpower and control tomorrow, that here has been ruled out as not even possible for you. Therefore, whether it's in the morning, whether it's in the evening, with whatever opportunities you have, with whatever the gifts are that God has given to you, put your feet to the path and put your hand to the plow. Diligence and proper confidence, using these opportunities in the morning, using these opportunities in the evening, cannot be motivated and they cannot be maintained by us comprehending how everything fits together, and can never be motivated or maintained because we can be absolutely certain where everything is headed in this here and now life. So it works on us, doesn't it? These false hopes and these false motivations that can so easily creep into our hearts when we look at our powerlessness and we look at the seemingly haphazard things that happen. Maybe both will succeed, both things that we're doing. Maybe neither will succeed. We don't know. But the foundation to all of this is that we give ourselves to our works, trusting that it is God who makes everything beautiful in its time. Well, let's reflect on a little bit on what we've heard today. The truth about how this world really is, and about us while we are in it, gives us reasons and motivations. The truth gives us reasons not to withdraw from this life, gives us reasons not to become gripped with fear or anxiety, but to engage wisely with our provisions and opportunities today. We need to work and invest and share wisely today and trust the Lord with the results. It's a good goal to create benefit for yourself and for others, and to pursue that goal not because we can control tomorrow, but because we can trust the Lord. All right, so here's what we have to do. We have to enter the race, and we have to engage in the battle. But it may not be won by the fastest. It may not be won by the strongest. Something may happen that we have no power to stop. Something may happen that we have no way to anticipate. Yes, any one of us can be snared in an evil time at any time. And it's true we cannot comprehend the big picture. And yes, it's true we cannot predict or completely understand the works of God who makes everything, but they are His works. And that should be enough to support your confidence. And that should be enough to support your joy today and your diligence today. This is a collection of strange-sounding Proverbs that bring us face to face with our ignorance. They bring us face to face with our powerlessness when it comes to what might happen. But that's God's mercy to us, to bring us face to face with that, so that we might be encouraged to a greater dependence upon Him. To everything there's a season. And we've read that already in this very book. To everything there is a sovereignly appointed time for every purpose under heaven. There's a time to be born and there's a time to die. And there's a time for everything and every event and every pleasant and every unpleasant thing in between being born and dying. So what will that time be? What will that season be? What will the events be for you tomorrow? Will they be planting or harvesting? Breaking down or building up? Weeping or laughing? Will tomorrow be grieving or dancing? Gaining or losing? Keeping or throwing away? Will it be conflict or peace? Whatever tomorrow will be for you, it is the work of God who makes everything beautiful in its time. And no, you can't predict it. And no, you cannot overpower it. But overpower it, why would you want to? If what is in store for you tomorrow has been stored up for you by God who is good. That gives us a good place to rest. Here's a foundation for true tranquility of soul. Are we not searching for that every day? And are we not tempted to try to find tranquility of soul today in the face of an uncertain tomorrow and try to do that with ways that are really not available to us? Let me leave you with this thought then. We know all things work together for good. We know that, do we not? To those who love God and to those who are called according to His purpose. Dear saints, consider this. Consider, for whom He foreknew, He also predestined to be conformed to the image of His Son. Consider that gift. Consider that promise. That Christ might be the firstborn among many brethren. And moreover, whom He predestined, these He also called. Consider the gift, the blessing of you being called by Him and changed by Him. And whom He called, these He also justified. And whom He justified, these He also glorified. Dear saints, think about these precious gospel promises given to you by your Savior. The Apostle Paul then says, well, how should we respond to these things? What shall we say? With the things that we know are true, with these promises that God has given us, these, the way that God has worked upon us, the gifts that He's given us, how shall we respond to these things? How shall we respond to the gospel? How shall we respond to this good news of our salvation? How shall we respond today in light of an uncertain tomorrow? When we think about the ultimate future and heavenly gifts that will not return to dust, how shall we respond to these things that God has done in us and that God has done for us and to these things that God has promised for us? How shall we respond to these things? Paul says, if God is for us, who can be against us? And then he says, He who did not spare His own Son, but delivered Him up for us all, how shall He not with Him also freely give us all things? That's spoken to saints in a context of great suffering. Spoken in a context where tomorrow might be famine and where tomorrow might even be the sword. To them, as well as to us, Paul directs us to ask this question: if God did not spare His own Son, And if he, through the Son and by the working of the Spirit, has applied the benefits of salvation to us, and if God has given us heavenly treasures that last forever, if God has granted to us the forgiveness of our sins, if God has granted to us peace between us and Him, God has granted us an account before Him, justified. If God has given to us the hope of glory, will He only then turn around and neglect us with whatever's going to happen tomorrow? So, dear saints, take encouragement. Take encouragement as you do all of your planning and thinking and decision-making today. Proceed. Get out there and live your life with joy and with confidence and with generosity. For all of these things are held safely within God's hands. Pleasant or difficult, desirable or undesirable, we know that God is good.